and two very, in fact, facts which are less mathematical than what you heard before, but which may trigger some deep mathematical questions. So the problem that we try to first, I worked on that problem with a number of people, theoretician, experimentalist. We have done electrical experiments. And without contacts with mathematicians, whose names are named here, Jacques Perrier, Peter Jones especially, and Nick Makarov, this could not have been done. Because being an experimental physicist, I have to learn from somebody how I can twist or not a theorem, you know, to make some simple use, perhaps. So the nice thing is that these people, sometimes I don't understand what they say, but they understand what I am saying, so they can answer to my question. Okay, so this is very important, as you will see. So the problem is, in fact, one of the simplest problems of physics, partial differential equation, which is the Laplace equation. The thing which is difficult is the boundary, which is an irregular fractal, rough, I mean some irregular surface. So this is the difficulty of the problem. So this occurs in electrostatics. This is Laplace equation with the potential, the electric potential. It happens in steady state heat transport. The same potential is obeyed in an electrolyte in an electrochemical cell. In heterogeneous chemistry, also in steady state, you have to solve the Laplace equation. In a system which are porous, very irregular geometry. And also, as we will see, one of the main applications is that it will help us to understand respiration. So the problem was, let's state the problem in an electrochemical frame. So this is an electrode, this is another electrode, it's flat, nothing happens here. And this is an irregular electrode. Now, the potential in the the electrolyte obeys Laplace equation, and the electric current, this is Ohm's law, and there is an Ohm's law also to cross the surface here, because a surface presents some electrochemical resistance. So this is the volume here is that potential zero, but there is some difficulty to cross the local current is proportional to the local potential divided by a surface resistivity R. So in this problem, there are two parameters.
So V is zero on the surface?
No, V is zero in the inner surface, but you can think that the electrode is covered by a thin layer which has some resistance R.
So you're saying there's a jump of the potential across the surface?
Yes. Okay. This is classical in, I can show you that. This is the simplest linear electrochemical response.
So then what's the boundary where the problem that you're solving outside?
I come into that. Okay. So the same problem formally. So if we have current conservation at the surface, the current crossing the surface is equal to the current which comes from the bulk on the surface, and this means that the boundary condition really is written here, potential divided by this gradient is equal to ratio of two transport coefficients that you could measure independently, and this is a length. Quantity divided by the gradient. This is a length, which of course, yeah?
So in the left-hand side of your top equation, so the current is, isn't the current like the voltage gradient rather than the voltage itself?
The current across the interface here is proportional to the local potential here. This is a current to cross, but of course it can be in mass to be fed by a current in the bulk.
You think there's a voltage drop.
Think that it has been painted with that. It's equivalent to that. Okay, so the problem that we have to solve is a solution of Laplace equation with that Fourier or Robin, sometimes it's called Robin-Van-Daring condition. Now, the same problem formally exists, for instance, in heterogeneous chemistry. Let me mention that for each dollar in the chemical industry, half a dollar is in catalysis. So these problems are extremely important in oil plants and things like that. Okay. So, and why do people want use very irregular surface? Because they need surface to have enough product, essentially. So the problem is the following. You have a catalyst. This is a catalyst surface. In the bulk, the flux of a species A is proportional to the gradient of concentration. This is Fick's law. And at the surface, there is some reactivity. That means that the flux, the products are created with some reactivity. So K is the surface reactivity. And so in a similar picture. So if we write this problem, C divided by this gradient, it's a ratio of two transport coefficients which balance in some sense the speed to reach the surface in the bulk and the speed to cross the surface, which in that case is a resistivity. And this is again a length. Okay, this is a photograph of a real catalyst grain. It is irregular. Now, what is the role, and this is very important because from that only, it's qualitative, but you will see that one can draw many consequences of that. So take an irregular surface first in 2D. It has some diameter. It's the diameter of the smallest sphere in which you can put your element. And it has some perimeter. Now, there is a conductance to reach this system, which in D equal to is a diffusion coefficient, in case of chemistry. It would be the conductivity in case of electrochemistry. And there is a conductance to cross a part of the boundary which has this perimeter. And the conductance to cross is simply the reactivity times the perimeter. Of course, something may happen when both are equal. Now, if they are not equal, what happens in the following? Now, suppose that you have a small something with a perimeter smaller than that length lambda. So this is a morphology parameter. Lambda is a physical parameter or chemical parameter. Now, in that case, it is easy to reach and difficult to cross. So, in fact, you reach everywhere easily, and that surface works uniformly. Now, in the other situation, it's easy to reach and difficult to cross. So the less accessible regions are not rich. There is this diffusion limitation or screening effect. So this screening effect is what happens, for instance, in the growth of DLA, in which in fact you grow by the tips only. So this is a situation like that. But of course, here we have a scale for that. A region which has a perimeter equal to lambda. So this will depend on the geometry of the surface. First works uniformly and presents an admittance of order D to be reached. Now we can make, I will just show you an experiment. I think this experiment is symbolically important. This is a real experiment. diagrams, as you will see, in which one can decorate where the action takes place on an irregular surface. So this is a two-dimensional electrochemical cell. There is an anode with a positive potential. There is a cathode. It is irregular. It has a small irregular feature, and it has a large irregular feature. And the current leaves the anode, and the question is where, in such a situation, the current reaches, really. And this is the result of the experiment. It's not a very easy experiment. What happens is if you have copper ions in the solution, in the location where there is current, the copper ions are deposited. So there is a depletion of ions, and you know copper ions are colored, so you can take photograph. Of course, it's much more involved of that, but this is some kind of a photograph of the activity along this surface. And you find that there is activity everywhere, uniformly on a small feature, and in a non-uniform manner on a large feature. And we know from textbooks what is the value of resistivity to cross and resistivity of the electrolytes, and it fits. So this is a perimeter larger than lambda. This is a perimeter smaller than lambda. So really, lambda, I mean, the relation of that physical length lambda with a morphological perimeter has a deep physical meaning. Okay, on a flat surface, in the case where you would have particles arriving by diffusion, you can compute exactly what is the probability to be absorbed. We shift to the diffusion, the equivalent diffusion representation. So we say a particle arrives somewhere on a flat surface. What is the region in which it is absorbed as an order of magnitude? And in D equal to 45% of the particles are absorbed on the length lambda, and in D equal 3, so this would be in a circle with a radius lambda over 2. So you see that this goes on a flat surface, but it gives you the scale. And this is a.
Sorry, what's the result?
So you have a flat surface, you have a particle arriving here,
yeah.
And then it is not absorbed with probability 1.
It bounces back?
It bounces back and diffuses back. And so it hits the surface several times. And you compute what is, you take a length lambda, like that, this is lambda, and you compute the number of particles which are finally absorbed within that length. So this is this is of order 50%. So this is give you some more precise information. Now, so the real system that we have to treat is the Rodin problem with lambda finite. And in fact, there are few results on that, but the Dirichlet problem is with lambda equal 0. In finite reactivity at the surface, every particle touching the surface reacts, or there is no resistance to cross the surface. So this has been extensively studied in D equals 2, and there is a very important result that I will use, which is Makarov theorem. So what states the Makarov theorem? It states that in D equal 2, the information dimension of the harmonic measure. So the harmonic measure is a distribution of arrival of diffusing particles starting from the source, or the distribution of the local electric current in different place. In that case, because solution of the same equation is equal to 1. For any simply connected surface. So this, I take that, and thanks to the help of our German, I Ah, I come to that. See, I thought that was okay. Essentially, is a dimension of the set which supports the current. The current is not arriving everywhere. Perhaps it's concentrated in some zone. This zone may have a fractal dimension, which has been shown to be whatever the morphology, even for a mathematical fractal, equal to one. So the translation, so the activity, so this means that the activity takes place on a subset of the boundary whose scale has a power one of the system size. And being even more brutal, the activity takes place on a subset whose size is over the size of the system. This is an approximate statement, but of course we, I mean, this is a complex problem which is not solved. So being an experimentalist, you look for some simple trick which may give you an approximate description. Okay, so the harmonic measure, everybody here knows that. So, okay, I don't have to. Now, so if you have a distribution of something, it can be described by this entropy. This is classical. If it's discrete, it's written here. If it's continuous, it's written here. So, for instance, if you have a normalized distribution as the harmonic measure on a segment of length L, so the entropy is log L. If you have only one point, the entropy is zero. Now the problem is if you have two points, two mass, one half on two points, they have an entropy equal to log 2, which is the same as the entropy of a uniform distribution on a length 2. So the entropy gives you something about you don't know. The amount of unknownness is the same between here and here, but it doesn't give you any information on where is the mass, where is the distribution. So the information dimension, it's a number which gives an information, a geometrical information of the distribution probability. So you take a square on your object, a box of size epsilon, and you count the quantity of something, the probability, the current, which is in that, in the box, and you take, in principle, the limit when epsilon goes to zero of that quantity. And this is the information dimension. So let's take a few examples. So if you have that uniform distribution, the number of box L over epsilon, the density is 1 over epsilon, so there is epsilon, the content of one box is epsilon over L, and if you take the limit of that, you find 1, and 1 is really the support of the activity. So this, if you have a distribution of two points, P1 and P2, and take the same trick, you find that the information dimension is zero. So now there is a difference between entropy and information dimension. And if you take the uniform distribution of the square of size L, now the normalized density is 1 over L squared. And if you take that, this is the number of box, this is the content of the box. And if you take the limit, you find 2, and 2 is really the support of the distribution. So the information dimension gives you some information about where is the mass of something, of a distributed normalized object. Now, the information dimension, which describes the dimension of the set which supports the harmonic measure from Makarov, is equal to 1. So we call that in this context the active zone. This is the idea where the action takes place on an irregular surface.
And this is in reference to the experiments were the experiments essentially a two-dimensional setup?
No, the experiment was in two dimension. Yes, okay. And this is valid only in two dimensions.
Yep.
The kind of results is valid only in two dimensions.
So this is a flat cell?
It was a flat cell. So now the length of the active zone, if you use a very, if you have a prefractal with some smaller cutoff and some diameter capital L, you write here, and the size of the active zone should be of order L. And this is a very extraordinary result because it means whatever the geometry, the active zone, it has always the same size. So extremely powerful. So I'll show you how we can use this this idea. Of course, it's a simplifying picture. Okay, so from that, if you take simply the ratio of the size divided by the perimeter, remember, this is always with Dirichlet. Makarov is for Dirichlet boundary condition. If you take simply the ratio of the size divided by the perimeter, it gives you the screening efficiency. So some, it gives you the fraction of the surface which is active, and this, whatever the morphology of the surface. And of course, the perimeter will be much, much larger, and the, in the case of Makarov, directly again, the activity, in fact, it's very reduced, only a small part of the surface is really so now, okay. So now, I'll try to shift to the Fourier or Robin boundary condition, because we know that depending on the size of a part of an interface, it may be absorbing or non-absorbing. So, what we do is, we take a rope of length lambda. And we know that lambda must be compared to a perimeter. So we apply that on the surface. And this gives a grain, which has that size, the length of the black line here. So this is the size of a grain that works uniformly inside and has a conductance D. And then you do that again and again and again on the surface. So we call that the land surveyor method. Because you go on the field with a rope and you measure the, you measure that. Now, this black line now is now due to this argument is in fact absorbing. If it is absorbing, it obeys now, it can be considered to obey Dirichlet boundary condition. Now, we have now a new electrode, a new surface, a coarse grain surface, which behaves as a Dirichlet boundary condition because a large part, each grain, because it's large enough, is absorbing. And now, we, because it's Dirichlet, we can apply this equivalent screening efficiency. So the perimeter of this coarse grain line, the length of the perimeter of the coarse grain line is the length of all these segments. They don't have to be equal. So it's the number of grains, by definition, times the average size of the grain. And the admittance of the perimeter of the coarse grain line is the number of grain times D, because D is the admittance of each grain. So but this has to be multiplied by the screening efficiency, Makarov, brutal use of Makarov result. So finally, the admittance can be written as the admittance of the total perimeter diminished by the screening efficiency. So this is a total perimeter, this is a screening efficiency, and if you write that, So this is simply D times L, the size of the system, divided by the average size of a drain. Of course, this is approximate. So for a prefractal electrode, the size of a grain, which has a perimeter lambda, is written here. So you will have the what how would behave with the Robin boundary condition, approximately, of course, the admittance of this irregular surface. Okay, in fact, in electrochemistry, the surface, instead of being only a resistor, if you apply AC, I'm mentioning that because this is how experiments are made, so the local resistance along the surface is a capacitor, which is written here. So lambda has now is imaginary and has this value. Gamma is a specific capacitance per square per centimeter.
The translation question. Is J equal to I?
Yes.
Oh, sorry.
J is equal to I.
Well, so, so if you write that, the impedance is a function of frequency has this behavior, so this gives some behavior in the complex plane as a function of frequency. And historically, the question was first asked in this context, because only the liquid drop electrode, the spherical smooth surface of mercury, behaves normally. So there are much debate about what creates the anomaly observed in real with real electrode, perhaps due to this their irregular surface and things like that. But this is how the question came of the fractal electrode. So you see, the response would depend on the fractal dimension. By the way, if you measure that, and you know what happened in the bulk, the transport coefficient in the bulk and the size of the system, you measure experimentally the size of a grain, something, the average size. So what the experiment tells you, you have something very complicated. It gives you so this is lambda. Let's say you have a grain, here you have a second lambda, and you have another grain. Okay. This gives you that question, which is a purely mathematical question. If you knew, now let me shift to a question, it's not an answer, a question. If you knew, you have an unknown morphology, but if you knew the relation between any perimeter, so this is something which goes on the perimeter, and the core, the length of the grain, could you retrieve the morphology? You measure that, could you retrieve the geometry? You measure that for principle many, many values of lambda. Could you retrieve, so if you have the chord, the average chord length, there is an inverse problem. Could you find the morphology from that? This is a question. Okay. So let's go now to, this is approximate, so you can take several morphology, and this is a comparison, this is numerical, so this is a fractal, and there are several electrodes, several morphology, and these are the comparison with the complete numerical calculation of the answer of the Robin problem, and that with this approximate argument. So you know that whatever the value of lambda, it's an approximation, but a good approximation. Now, if our argument is true, this relation is valid, within a few restrictions, both for a random and a deterministic fractal. So a random and deterministic fractal with the same smaller cutoff and the same fractal dimension should have the same answer. my personal activity or interest in fractal was that if random growth frequently builds fractal objects which are hierarchical structure, perhaps what is important in the properties of these objects is not their randomness, but only their hierarchical structure, which could be tamed by an equivalent deterministic fractal. So this is a familiar picture in which you can compute, and now you can make that, that reverse and make it random. When you watch that, this is irregular, it's not clear that it's fractal, but it has the same fractal dimension. And you can go to, this is a self-avoiding random walk, dimension 4/3. And this is a deterministic fractal with the same fractal dimension, 4 divided by 3. Now, if you compute the answer, this is, you can see that all of these 4 have more or less the same, not exactly, but essentially the same response. And these 2, which correspond to these 2, has the same response, whatever the frequency, whatever the length of lambda. So this means that, in fact, Makarov's result is extremely powerful, even if you use it in an approximate manner. For instance, if you watch, so these are the equipotential lines, very different here from here. Here the action takes place here, here and here, it's very different. But the net result is very close. So you don't need random fractals to some extent to understand how they work. You have to find an equivalent deterministic fractal. Okay. No, right. Sorry. Wow. Now, if you want to enter to I would just introduce that to a more precise description, you could say, as there is a resistance along the surface, there is heat, which is, and you could measure, you would put thermometers along. This is not feasible, of course, but you could do that. So this would define an impedance. So this is, would be the heat generated, this is the Joule law. And it's, of course, the sum of the local heat generated in each surface element. So this is now, whatever the dimension equals 2, d equals 3. Now this can be written like that. So really this is the normalized current. So the normalized current is the harmonic measure in the case of Dirichlet. Here it's some measure which is modified by the Robin boundary condition. Now if you write that as usual as a resistance divided by an active length, you find that from this more precise definition, the length of the active zone is in fact given. This is a rigorous formula, but exact result. So this is different from L. So this means that we have made an approximation somewhere, which may not play a role for any really, let's say, realistic system, which is not a fractal of the 15th generation, but in principle. And this tells you that something comes into that with the correlation dimension. I won't go into that, this is published, but I will just now try to give the sketch of a more precise description, and that Denis Grebenkopf will start on this afternoon to give the mathematical aspects of this problem. So the idea comes from Thomas Halsey and the following. So you have a source of diffusing particles. They work at random and hit the surface. So there is a probability for each site of the surface to be reach from the source. This is some number for site I. So the distribution along the surface of this probability can be considered as a vector. But of course, if they are not absorbed with probability 1, they may come here, bounce here, again, come back to the source. So the phenomena itself, when the surface is not perfectly absorbing, again, this Fourier-Roman boundary condition is more complex. So the probability of absorption at a given site is a probability to be absorbed as first site, then the probability to be absorbed with one bounce. So you are absorbed with probability 1 minus epsilon, and you have to bounce back with probability epsilon, or two hits of the surface, or three, or n. So this can be, so in fact, the probability to be absorbed at site j, in fact, for each site, constitutes also a vector. And this vector is expressed like that. So you can see it can be written. So you introduce, here you have the square of the matrix, which gives, there is a matrix which gives the probability starting from one point to go to another point on the surface without going on the source. This matrix we call Q, QEG, and it's the Brownian self-transport operator. And of course, this operator will play a role, because even if you arrive at the beginning on the harmonic measure set, which is restricted, of course, because you are not absorbed there, it will spread the activity in the, yes?
So this thing seems to be just a property of your Euler problem, right? It's just really the Green's function, essentially.
Yes. So finally, you can find that the overall probability distribution to be absorbed with a finite probability of absorption can be written in an operatorial form like that. Then you can write what is really measured in an experiment. It's written here. And finally, if you replace that by that operator, and you express, you develop the operator on its eigenvectors alpha. So you see that finally the response is given by that sum over the eigenvectors of this Brownian self-transport operator, which is written here. And this is the projection of the harmonic measure on eigenvector alpha of that operator. Dönning-Rebenkov will describe that in more detail. Now, this can be used to understand respiration, because to some extent respiration is a Laplacian problem. So this is a bronchial tree. This is a real cast of a real human lung. So we are interested by the circuitry for air. So this is a trachea, and it's split into main bronchia, and so you have a dichotomous tree for 15 generations. Now, at the so this is the end. By the way, this is for the human, this is for the rat. So if you know, humans and rats are built with the same rules, all the mammals. Now, at each of these, so there are 2 to the power 15, about 30,000 bronchioles like that. At each of it, you have a small organum, which is perhaps 3 millimeters of size, which is called one acinus. And this is an acinus, and this is the entry of air. So in fact, really, it's a compact thing, so they have cut things to see how. And an acinus is defined as the fact that you have here all these small, these are the alveoli. And each acinus has something like 10,000 alveoli. Now, when you breathe, the flow of air is constant, but the surface increases, so the velocity decreases to a point where the velocity, so at first, oxygen is transported with air, but when the velocity of air decreases, there is another mechanism to transport oxygen, which is diffusion. I'll come to that. So if you take a razor and cut an asinus, you will see like the surface of a sponge, but of course it's an organized sponge, because it's a tree. So there are something like, if you look closer, each alveoli has approximately that size. This is a picture. And this is, if you look closer, so this is the membrane, the capillaries. So here the blood. So in fact, there is air above, below, above and below. And you can see even the blood cells in this photograph. These are beautiful experiments made by Evan Weibel in Bern, Switzerland. And the oxygen has to diffuse in this volume and across the membrane to be trapped by blood, which in first approximation is a sink for oxygen because hemoglobin sucks any, more or less, any oxygen molecule which is in the plasma. So, let me go. So really what we, in a simplified picture, what we want to understand is we have a source of diffusion here, and we have diffusion, and a finite probability to cross the membrane because the membrane has a finite permeability. So again, this is a Robin problem with Laplace equation with, but on a very irregular surface. So essentially at sinus entry you have a diffusion source. This is fixed source current, the flow is proportional to the gradient of concentration. In steady state you have that. And the current across the membrane is proportional to the difference of concentration of oxygen in the air, blue, and blood, supposed to be red. Okay. Now we are in 3D. So what is the role of lambda in 3D? So we take the same type of reasoning, it's slightly different. The conductance to reach the surface in 3D is proportional to the diameter of the surface. The conductance to cross is the total area of the region times the permeability. Of course, so depending on the size, for a small element, will work uniformly, and for a large element, there will be some regions which are not accessed, that is diffusion screening. So the surface is partially passive. Now, the crossover is obtained when both are equal. Now, here, it's when, so this is specific to 3D, the surface, total surface divided by this diameter is of order of lambda. Now, what is the geometrical significance if you have a surface and you divide an irregular surface and you divide that by the size of the object? We name that the perimeter of the surface. The perimeter of the surface. We call that. Now, something like the average planar cut of the surface. Example, take a sphere, this is the surface, this is the diameter, and if you cut the ratio surface divided by diameter, it's on the order of a planar cut of the surface. This is true for a cube, this is even true for a self-similar fractal with dimension 2, because it's a total area. If it's, this is a smaller cutoff, this total area is given here, its size is capital L. So if you do, and Falconer has shown that the cut of a fractal of dimension D is a fractal of dimension D minus 1. So it fits also with a fractal. And now I will make an experiment in front of you. So this is supposedly a flat surface. It's a little wrong number. Suppose it's flat. It's something by 20 by 30 centimeters. 600 square centimeters. the leg. And if you measure that, you will find something which is compatible with this rule. Okay? So, as you, I mean, for me, it's just, let's say, more or less an empirical fact. If you have any precise mathematical information, what type of surface obeys or disobeys to this rule, but it's working. Okay. You can take, this is an experiment, you can do other experiments in the brain system. It works. So this is a curve, so the ratio of the surface divided by the size is something like the perimeter of the cut. But the anatomists, they know. They have made cuts of this asinus, this diffusion cell. So the cut is the length of this red curve. This is the length of the cut. Now, okay, let's go. So, if you take the human asinus, you find that the perimeter, so this is morphological, purely morphological, and this is purely physical. And you find that the real asini are built with a size which correspond roughly to that rule, the crossover. And this is true not only for the human asini, but it's true. So you know, this indicates that evolution has selected something which takes care of diffusion screening in some sense.
What is being optimized by this choice? I'm not quite sure. What's optimal?
Well, depending on the, it's the fact that this is the critical regime in which the surface is supposed to work uniformly. In fact, you could say, why do we need a bronchial tree to feed these 30,000 asini? We could have a huge asini, okay, and stay waiting for diffusion. We could stay long.
Well, that's what insects do.
Yeah, but on a much smaller. Yes, on a much smaller
scale.
Okay, so this is true for all the mammals, more or less. I mean, you see that this, the size of the asinus, the size of the alveolar, everything is different. But the perimeter of a cut always keeps in the same range, tens of centimeters from mouse to human. So this means that all these... So in fact, this is an experimental, electrochemical experimental demonstration why you need a bronchial tree. You don't want to have a surface which is not used. You don't want to have, because diffusion coefficients and permeability are given. So you don't want to have, if you want to be efficient, you don't want to have that. This has been, not entering into that, we have made much work. I would just want to show you a result by Denis Rebenkov, which is very interesting. If I come back, this is a real asini. It's a complex, it's random, I mean, it's not a regular dichotomic tree, it's a little more complex. Now, if you compute the response of that random complex system and compare it to the average dichotomic tree, you see this is not exact, but there is very little difference. Here again, randomness plays a little role. Only the hierarchical structure plays governs the phenomena. Now, just to close and to trigger let's say mathematical question, let me mention passivation of an irregular surface. In chemical industry, what is passivation? In which you have a useful reaction. A gives, so X is, let's say, a catalytic site. So this is useful. You want to product A star from X. Okay, this is okay. This is the process I described. Now, in parallel, there may exist a reaction which destroys the catalytic site, with some probability. So, when this occurs, there is no more catalysis. This point of the surface has become passive. So, instead of being, even if you would have Dirichlet, there would be, after some time, sometimes some sites will be destroyed, some part of the surface, the active part of the surface will become normal. So we have now a new problem. So this is the situation. So this is a former active zone, let's say, in case of Dirichlet, it's only the prominent zone with a total perimeter equal to the site. And then after passivation, there is nothing else happen more here, because this is killed. So this is shown in black. What happened next? This we have computed numerically, and the result is shown here. So you have an active zone. Then you transform the active zone in passive. So you apply Neumann boundary condition on that subset. But of course, particles which arrive at random on this surface, they bounce back and explore the surface. And you have a new active zone. And this new active zone may be passivated and again and again. And what happened is, so this is a plot of the length of the passivation as a function of the iteration steps. And you see this is more or less linear. So it means that the length of the active zone, even if you have a subset which is passive, is approximately constant. So in some sense, this gives some conjecture that this could be a generalization of Makarov result. Because if you kill the activity on a minor part of the surface, very near you will find another active zone, and it happens that this new active zone in D equal 2 has more or less the same size. This is shown here. Mm-hmm. And there is a big question, and it's very, very different in three dimensions, but for this you have to go to workshop 2.